to listen to the Left Traffic Podcast.
What's up, Left Traffic Nation? Welcome to episode 68 of the Left Traffic Podcast. I am your host, the Professor Brandon Crowd. One word to describe this weekend's racing is wow. And I will get to that in a bit. And that's not just because Kevin Harvick got his fifth win. Get that off the table right now. It's not because of that. We're going to get to that in due time. I hope everyone had a great weekend. Hope all the moms had a great Mother's Day. It was cold and rainy here in Metro Detroit. Lindsay was in Phoenix last week. Picked her up at the airport on Thursday. She's been a bit under the weather since. Today is really her first day of feeling like a normal human being again. So got to just kind of hang out this weekend, which was good considering as how we had two night races, which was awesome. Tonight's show starts the countdown to Michigan International Speedway. Can't wait to get out there. Going to record a show. Got a lot of things planned over the next month, which I am very excited about, which leads to the kickoff of the MIS countdown. The legendary Jeff Gluck will be on here in a minute. Going to talk with Jeff about what he's got going on, get his opinions on some things. And then he's going to stick around. We're going to talk some racing from this weekend at Kansas. As always, Aaron will be on to give his usual weather report, your lucky dog, lap down picks, fantasy updates, giveaway winners, and more. That said, thank you to everyone that's helped spread word about the show on social media. And it is time to get right in to today's show. No long drawn out intro. Let's get rolling. All right. Joining me on the line from JeffGluck.com. You can find him on Twitter at Jeff_Gluck. And of course, you can find him at a tweet up near you making his lap traffic debut. Mr. Jeff Gluck, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. I'm really glad that we finally got a time for me to be on. That's of course my fault that I hadn't been on before. You had been very nice to ask me earlier, and it took me a while.
Hey,
but
no
I'm
worries.
Glad you followed up, and I'm glad that we're finally doing this.
Absolutely, it's not like you're busy or anything, so you know I get it. It's all good. How was your weekend? How's life outside of racing?
It's good. You know what? I feel like right now is kind of like a real sweet spot in my life, and I'm sort of just trying to enjoy it and soak it up while it lasts. You know, I mean, this is in the second year of doing the Patreon thing with JeffGluck.com. And I mean, it's just sort of a continual pinch myself kind of thing where it's like, I can't believe it. This is going okay. And I'm getting to these races, and you know, it was pretty scary to, you know, when it first started, and it's just like, it's holding steady. So
that's awesome.
I assume at some point people will get tired of supporting me and just be like, all right, we've done enough here. But for now, it's still going okay. So I'm really happy about that. And then I really love where I'm living right now in Oregon. We moved out here for my wife's job, and I didn't really know anything about it. And it's just turned out to be amazing. And then, you know, we're expecting our first daughter in October. So
congrats.
So like
this was
going super well right now.
This was kind of like a pre-first Mother's Day for your wife then this past weekend.
Yeah, exactly. And I actually screwed up because I didn't realize that you were supposed to like do stuff for the mother to be. So like, I didn't get a gift or anything. I felt really bad. And I saw on Instagram that like people were giving gifts to their expectant wives and stuff. And I was like, uh-oh. And so I probably, if I'm in the doghouse, she didn't say anything, but she probably didn't totally appreciate that I whiffed on that. So
that's funny. Well, it's funny you say that. So just to piggyback off that. So when my wife and I got married, you know, got the engagement ring, right? Well, I'm like, all right, I spent what I thought was a decent chunk of change on this engagement ring. I didn't realize that there was a separate band requirement. I just thought she gave me that ring and I put that on her finger during the ceremony. And it wasn't till about 3 weeks before the wedding, she was like, did you get the band? I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I thought I'd just give you this back on the altar. And so I had to go rush to the jeweler and get a new band made for that ring. So yeah, I'm with you on kind of making flubs like that. I get that.
All right. Well, I'm glad you can relate.
Yes, 100%. You mentioned kind of like the pinch me kind of thing. I feel you on that too. I mean, it's a different level. You're doing this from a career standpoint and I'm doing this from a fun hobby standpoint, but the mere fact that on Monday, Tuesday evenings, I sit in my basement and talk to Jeff Gluck or Ben Rhodes or Cole Custer, that is a surreal, like, you know, holy cow moment. Am I really doing this right now as a hobby in my basement? So that's awesome. And I don't think people will get sick of that, because if you have that feeling, people definitely pick up on that excitement, I think. So that's awesome. Tell everyone a little bit more about the Patreon account, how they can support you and you know, get more content from you.
Well, I guess if people just want to go like to the website, that's what I would start them out with, because I feel like, you know, if you just ask people right away to be like, oh, go to Patreon and pledge money per month,
money,
and
yeah,
like,
yeah,
they haven't even really seen. Yeah, yeah. I just feel like people are gonna be like, why would I do that? Like, I guess I would rather people, you know, just ultimately, if they feel it's worth it and they want to support it, then that's something that it's their choice. But I've been very reluctant to just be like, you know, hey, do this, give me money, because I just feel like that's like, how do you know for yourself if you find it worth it or not?
Sure.
Well, that was kind of my experience with my I was following this guy who does a Survivor podcast every week, and this was a few years ago, and I was listening to a couple of his podcasts every week and was finding a lot of enjoyment out of it, because I really like the show Survivor, and he breaks down the strategy that goes into it and all that stuff. And I thought, man, this is awesome. And he would start to talk about how, you know, if you enjoy listening and you want to become a patron of the podcast, here's how you do it. So at some point I was like, you know what? Yeah, I'll give this guy $5 a month. I mean, like, I want him to keep doing it. I enjoy it. I'm getting basically like free entertainment out of it.
Sure.
So yeah, sure. Like, I'll give him $5 a month. So then that was actually what sort of inspired my thing. Once my wife was going to be looking for jobs outside Charlotte, and USA Today was like, no, we're not going to let you move. And I'm like, okay, well, what am I going to do here?
Right. Yeah.
And I just thought, well, I wonder if like a Patreon type thing would work for NASCAR or even work for journalism. And it was all based off that enjoyment that I was getting from the Survivor podcast.
That's cool. That's awesome. See, everything kind of comes full spectrum sometimes. That's awesome. All right, let's talk a little NASCAR here. Jeff, I can only imagine that some of the questions are becoming a little bit repetitive at this point, a third of the way through the season. So I'm not going to ask you about pit guns, I promise you that. But what I do want to get your take on is a couple broader NASCAR hot topics. Let's talk about the potential NASCAR sale at some point in the future. You know, this isn't new in terms of NASCAR potentially selling, but it's really kind of come on strong lately. Is there any insight on why this is back on the table, and who could potentially maybe be a market for something like this in terms of who is the market to maybe purchase NASCAR, and how do you maybe see this playing out?
Well, it's tough because, you know, I don't think we have a ton of information, and I've been trying to think through this a little bit. I think that, you know, what would have to happen is that the tracks would have to be involved with this in a big way, as a big part of it. Because if you just bought NASCAR, just, you know, okay, I'm going to own the title NASCAR and I'm going to own whatever comes with that, you don't own the racetracks.
Right.
So, you know, how do you then know that you're going to be able to go to the tracks and say, okay, here's what I want to do, or whatever. The tracks still have to work with you. And so I don't know that it's super valuable unless you own the tracks, because part of the whole problem right now with the schedule is that the tracks are locked into these agreements, and there's the possibility of a shareholder suing. to, you know, some sort of antitrust thing. And so those same problems would still be there if somebody else owned NASCAR, just because the owner was switching. I don't know that that would necessarily change things. So
It's not like if NASCAR switches hands tomorrow, it's not like we're going to be racing at short tracks and more road courses in 2020 or anything like that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's really what needs to change, I think. I mean, that's the biggest thing about the sport that needs to change is the schedule and to shake things up. And
Amen.
Whether it's mixing up the order of the dates or mixing up the kind of venues. I mean, I maintain that NASCAR would be a completely different sport today if, you know, all these mile and a half tracks, if they were all short tracks, and then we only saw NASCAR go to, you know, intermediate tracks a few times a year, and it was a basically short track series. You know, I think that would be, you know, unbelievable every week to see these guys race so close together, and the tempers and the carryover, and been able to spin each other out for retaliation for the week before and not really have a risk of, you know, doing someone, you know, bodily harm, essentially.
Sure.
But, you know, I think that would be unbelievable, but I don't think NASCAR can get there right now. And then even the tracks that they have, you know, are sort of locked into the certain dates per time of the year and things like that. So I think that's what really needs to be the shakeup. And just a new owner alone doesn't solve that.
What's the time frame in terms of some of these renegotiations with some of these tracks that people might have an issue with in terms of, you know, either moving them in the schedule or, you know, getting rid of one race or something like that? I mean, how far out are we looking at some of these intermediate tracks that have two races guaranteed lock-ins?
Well, I mean, right now they have those sanctioning agreements till 2020, but, you know, even then, I think NASCAR's policy ever since this Serco lawsuit, who was the shareholder for SMI and basically was involved with Texas realignment and stuff like that, ever since then, NASCAR sort of maintained, well, if you're going to request a realigned date, it has to come from the same track company. And so that's why there was like, an urgency for SMI at one point to buy New Hampshire, because now ultimately they turned that into a Vegas date from their own company. But
sure.
Aside from that, you know, it was like you couldn't just swap you couldn't just say, okay, Pocono stinks. We're going to take out Pocono and put an ISC track there because then Pocono could potentially sue and things like that. So if you could somehow own all the tracks, then you could say, okay, well, now we don't have to worry about shareholders anymore. We're just going to go to the places where we need to go to make it a successful sport.
Sure.
So wherever that needs to happen, that's what we'll do for the good of the thing that this potential person or company could own.
Valuable information there, sir. Let's talk track sponsorship, both at a NASCAR and a team level. I've kind of taken the position, the fact that Monster only came in for a 2-year deal and took so long to announce a renewal could potentially damage and hurt future sponsorships at the team level and at the main title sponsorship level, because if I'm company X and I'm looking at Monster, who's a really big company, and they're hesitant in only doing these short stints, why? Well, you know, so should I have some hesitation with getting in? Do you see as a potential issue here? Maybe this is why Monster only renewed for 1 year. Maybe, you know, they obviously had talks with NASCAR that this might be coming up as an issue.
There's a possibility it could have been on their radar, but I just think more in general that the entire climate right now of NASCAR is changing. And, you know, I think, you know, Monster probably looking at like, well, where's the long-term investment for us with the amount of money we're spending? They could still stay on as like some official energy drink sponsor and not have to spend that same kind of money. And they could still activate with everything they're doing now and still be an official partner and have tons of rights and things like that. You know, I think everybody's, you know, if you think that sponsors and marketing companies and all these people aren't looking at the TV ratings and the attendance, I mean, they see it. You know, nobody has to point it out. I think Kansas race got something like a 1.2 rating or something crazy like that.
Yeah.
pretty bad. I mean, these are like, we're talking some of the lowest TV ratings for NASCAR races in history. So, and it's not, you know, each week this year, it's been down double digit percentages. So people see that they're, you know, all the companies that are doing their research about investing in the sport, they understand that. So I think that's really where, the change comes from. I don't think, you know, one sponsor leaving, even Lowe's or something like that, would make people wake up and go, I didn't realize that this was going on. Cause I think they all see it and they all know. And that's why you're seeing the whole model seemingly change, very quickly.
Well, yeah, you know, and that's leading to, you know, more and more, you know, gone are the days of DuPont and now Lowe's, from season long primary sponsorships. You know, you've got, you know, anywhere between 5 to 10 potential sponsors. That's more work on the teams. That's more work on PR. That's more obligations that the driver has to have in terms of, you know, showing up for functions and things of that nature. It's definitely changing in that regard. And like you said, you know, if you look at the stands, you know, and that I think just kind of ties back to where you said, you know, there's too many intermediate tracks out there. Let's try to maybe somehow get to tracks that people want to go to, which might swing things and change the pendulum a little bit.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, you really nailed it as far as the commitments it puts on the driver and things, because obviously, I mean, let's even say Bubba Wallace, right? So they're going around and they're just trying to fill out their schedule. That, you know, they've been trying to track whatever sponsor they can get. So if a sponsor comes to them and says, hey, you know, we'll give you two primary sponsorships, but we also want Bubba to do all these appearances for us, then of course they're going to be like, okay, yeah, we'd love that. Yeah, whatever, you know. But then they have other sponsors who are saying the same thing. So the demands on these guys' time is probably at record levels, I would say, even though sponsorship overall is down. So in turn, they have probably less time for the general public, for the fans, for the media, things like that. And that in turn sort of hurts things as well.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that in terms of the general public. You know, NASCAR likes to do, I think, a good job of showing pictures of people getting autographs and things like that in the garage. And that's not something your everyday fans getting access to, even though they kind of try to make it look like that. Do you think maybe more access from a general public perspective to the drivers would increase attendance, or would that help anything if they were to do what some of these, you know, like the NHRA or things like that, where the drivers and fans interact more race weekend?
I don't know. I do know it couldn't hurt for sure. I mean, it definitely couldn't hurt, but is that going to be something where, like, you know, cause like IndyCar, for instance, they have an hour long autograph session with the entire field every race weekend.
Right.
It's just mandatory. Every driver, it doesn't matter who you are, you have to go do a 1 hour autograph session all together at the same time. And obviously that's a tremendous value for the fans. You walk through, get everybody's autograph. I mean, they're all right there. It's pretty incredible. But at the same time, I mean, if NASCAR did that and you got to meet all the NASCAR drivers on a Friday or Saturday, you know, would that suddenly bring tons more people? I mean, I certainly would think it would bring some.
Sure.
But I just don't know if, you know, that would change things. I think we're at the point right now with everything NASCAR where I don't think there's any sort of magic bullets anymore.
Okay.
There used to be like, if only this would happen, or if only young people, or if only this, you know, if only they got more TV shows or more exposure this way, all these sorts of things. And it was sort of like, you know, if only we got that one driver where they would just really be the next superstar. I at this point, I don't think any one thing would reverse all the things that are happening. I think it's all little things that would help build it back up, just like it's a bunch of various things that have helped it get to the point where it is today. I don't think it's any one thing.
I'm with you. I like that. All right. Rather than talk about specific driver performances, we all know Jimmy's struggling a little bit. We all know Kevin's dominating. Let's talk a little team comparison. HMS is obviously not performing at the level we've all come to know. Chip Ganassi, a two-car Chevy team with HMS engines, really only seeing some shines of brilliance from Kyle Larson. Can you kind of compare what we're seeing with these two Chevy teams a little bit?
Well, I mean, to me, I don't even know if I can say that it's Ganassi because, you know, Jamie McMurray is not running anywhere close to what Kyle Larson runs.
Right.
Maybe I'm, you know, giving too much credit to Larson here because it really does come down to the cars in a lot of cases, but it certainly does seem like Larson is single-handedly elevating that team and that car because he could take a car and put it where other drivers don't run or can't put it and find the place on the track where that car works the best. And I think that as close as these cars are, I think that can sort of make up for a car that's not that great. I mean, Larson seemed to be the fastest car at Kansas, but I doubt that was really the car with the actual best speed. I mean, if you just rolled it off the truck and put the average driver in there, I don't think that car is competing with Kevin Harvick or Truex or anybody like that for a win. And Larson just seemed to, you know, he was running that high line and he does that so many weeks. And I think McMurray more runs where the rest of the Chevys do.
Yeah.
So I think that's sort of like, he's sort of the anomaly. I think that Ganassi and Hendrick are probably fairly close otherwise.
With Larson being the outlier.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, because you see all four Hendrick drivers run pretty close together. So it does seem like that's how their cars just are. And maybe if they improve, then
the team as a
whole. You know, you see more of those guys running up front. But yep. I certainly, you know, I don't think Jimmy Johnson's lost anything. I really don't. I think he's probably in the best shape of his life still or close to it, even though he's in his 40s. And I think he still knows how to get it done. I just don't think that he has the cars right now that can do it.
I'm with you there, 100%. All right, if we were to look at the top two Ford teams, we're looking at Stewart, Haas, and Penske. While Ford's dominating the win column, it's really Harvick that's dominating the win column. You know, some comments have been brought to light about Brad's comments last year with Ford versus Toyota. Where are Stewart, Haas, and Penske versus each other and the rest of the field right now?
Well, I think that Stewart, Haas has to be clear number one. You know, with the penalty that Larson got this week, I think all four Stewart Haas drivers are now in the top 10 in points. And I think it was Nick Bromberg from Yahoo looked this up and that hasn't been done in the playoff era where a team has had all four cars in the top 10 this late in the season. So pretty remarkable what they're doing. And
sure.
They just start showing up with speed every week. I mean, your boy Harvick is just kicking so much butt. And
well, you noticed that, did you? I try to be objective. I really do. And I think I do a pretty good job with it. But, yeah, I'm not going to lie. I'm pretty excited.
Well, I mean, it's remarkable what he's doing. So it's, I mean, quite okay to be excited, I think, about it in general. Just because it's like this, we don't really see this very often. Even when Harvick was dominating – we were beating a bunch of laps in like 2014 or whatever. I mean, he wasn't winning at this pace or even close to it. I mean, he's already tied his career best win total for a season 12 races into the year. And then when like Truex was dominating, he wasn't winning at this pace. I mean, he ended up winning 8 times a year ago when it seemed like he was just unbeatable. But I mean, Harvick already has just 3 short of that and 2/3 of the season to go. So,
yeah.
I think it's pretty special what we're all witnessing. And I just think, you know, Harvick and Childers together, that combo puts them a step above the Stewart Haas cars, who are in turn a step above the Penske cars, who are probably right on the same level as Toyota. Maybe Toyota's a little bit about Penske, but probably right around there. And then it's a sort of a drop off to everybody else,
sure. Except
Larson.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. All right, and lastly, let's look at Joe Gibbs Racing versus Martin Truex Jr., basically. How do the two Toyota teams compare right now versus each other and the rest of the field?
I think that Truex and Kyle Busch are probably about the same. Seems like Kyle Busch's team has done a pretty good job executing this year, maybe a little bit better than Truex has. He just has a lot of consistent speed. But you know, I think the Toyotas apparently they had a lot of speed last year from that splitter. And ever since NASCAR went to cracking down on the splitter and making sure there was a common splitter this year that had to be flat for everybody. I think that that supposedly hurt the Toyota teams, and they're still trying to make up ground. And at the same time, the new optical scanning station helped the Fords catch up a little bit to the Toyotas. So I think that, that's put the Fords ahead, and that's why you see the Toyota teams sort of similar to each other. But they're not too far off.
No. I mean, to be honest, and we'll get to this here in a little bit, I really thought it was Truex. I really thought he was going to get the win this weekend with that last restart there, but we'll get to that in a minute. All right, let's transition. I could talk to you all night about random NASCAR stuff like this. Let's talk a little on-track racing from this past weekend at Kansas. Let's start with the truck race. It was the Noah Gregson show, winning both the first and second stage and bringing home the checkered flag. This thing started out three wide early on the backstretch on lap one with Coughlin, Gregson, and Crafton. Crafton leads the first lap, ends up falling back to fourth. This race spaced out quickly, as we would come to expect with a mile-and-a-half race. 20 laps in, almost a 10-second difference between P1 and P10. And this first stage went caution-free. Stage two was relatively quiet. Tough break for lap traffic alum Ben Rhodes, who was running P2, had to bring it down for some fuel issues, ended up finishing a few laps down, finished 18th. Jeff, can you comment a little bit on the first half of the truck race? I mean, pretty typical what you would expect from a mile-and-a-half track, right?
Yeah, except the only thing was I kind of thought that do you remember that Vegas truck race earlier this year, and they pretty much were, like, drafting for
most
of it?
Yes.
I thought that was going to be what Kansas looked like. And I was a little bit surprised it wasn't, but I asked Kyle Busch about it after the race, and he said that you're pretty much wide open at Vegas all the way around, I think. And I guess you had to lift just enough at Kansas so that, you know, you couldn't really see the pack thing going on quite as much. And they were saying that Rudy Fusel was saying that Charlotte will probably be even more spaced out than Kansas was. So there's a slight little bit of pack stuff going on on the restarts, but it wasn't quite what Vegas looked like, which I thought that was going to be how the race was.
Good info there. Stage three, tough break for Moffitt, who finished third and second in the first two stages, had a battery issue, ended up finishing 16th. First on-track caution came with 69 to go. We got another one with 62 to go when the 54 slid across pit road. Gregson Pitts giving up the lead with 32 to go, and it became a fuel mileage race. Kyle Busch comes out ahead of Gregson, but Gregson makes the pass on Kyle with 11 to go to move up to P5, and he just chased down the field and took the lead with 5 to go. Jeff, could this have been written any better in a storybook fashion? Gregson almost gets it done last week at Dover, gets into it with Sauter with some old school side-by-side, beating on the door racing. Takes himself out of the race, class act, all that. I don't know how sweet last week's win would have tasted, but this week's had to taste sweeter.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. And it was a big comeback for Gregson, especially mentally. You know, like, let's say he coughs that one up after Dover, then all of a sudden you have a situation where you're like, oh boy, you know, this guy, maybe he can't close out races. He keeps screwing up late in the races. What's he doing? So I think the fact that he was able to come back and finish one off, that's pretty important. But you know, there was I think some fair questions about Gregson after last year. I mean, he was in a KBM truck all last year and really didn't do much with it. And so I think coming into this year, I mean, you saw the whole blow up over Bob Pockrass's rankings of young drivers, and he wasn't, given a mention, and I think that was not too far off just based on what Gregson had done. Now he's sort of living up to the performance of what you would expect to see from somebody in a KBM truck. And so, you know, that's very important for his career.
Absolutely. If we look at the standings, Johnny Sauter's leading the points. Gregson's in second. One guy I want to talk about, Matt Crafton, kind of off to a slow start. No playoff points, no stage wins, no race wins. Late manufacturer change with these guys in the offseason. Is that playing a little bit of a role there still, do you think?
I would guess so. I mean, the reason I say that is just because based off what Stuart Haas had to go through last year.
Sure.
And maybe it's not quite as intensive a process in trucks, but I mean, it puts Stuart Haas, who's a great team, pretty far behind last year. So, if it was something in trucks where there's even half of that, I can see where it would put them behind. But I still think he'll make the playoffs and all that stuff because he's too much of a good veteran racer, where he'll score the points and he'll get himself in the position, unless there's a whole bunch of different winners yet to come. But I think he'll get it in on points.
Sure.
If nothing else.
Yep. All right, the trucks are back on Friday night for the only points race this weekend at Charlotte, and then they've got a few weeks off. The Xfinity Series is off this weekend. They're back at it next week with the Cup. Jeff, just want to kind of get you maybe a general thought on what you're seeing in the Xfinity Series so far this season. Elliott Sadler doing what he does. He points races. He takes advantage of the fact that Cup guys are going to collect a lot of wins, and he's just going to sit back there and get some top fives and lead the series like he's done the last few years.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think that he and Allgaier really too. I mean, they both run pretty well and take what they have. They're, you know, the veterans in them, I think they don't try to make too much of it and throw away a day where they're not going to win. I do think it's interesting though, because I thought this would be a year where Christopher Bell is completely dominating the series. I thought he was going to come out and as talented as he is and Gibbs equipment, and win at the rate that Cup guys usually do.
Sure.
And just like completely run away with it. Sort of like, almost like a Byron in the truck series when he was, running for KBM that year, where he was just like, man, this guy is so good and has such a bright future. But I think, Bell has found things, I don't know if you could say he's struggling, cause I don't think they're too far off, but maybe struggling by the standards that they would have thought they had. So I'm interested to see how the year evolves for him, just because I think that people had pretty high expectations for him coming into the year.
Sure, absolutely. All right, over to the Cup Series. Blaney gets stage one, Larson with stage two, and Harvick wins his fifth in 12 races. Stage one, Harvick led early through the comp caution. So a little bit of tire strategy through that competition caution. Byron actually comes out ahead of everybody but gets a penalty. Blaney inherits the lead. Larson from 38th to 9th in 27 laps. Blaney would go on to win stage one during a relatively quiet caution-free stage with the exception of the competition caution. Stage two, Harvick and Blaney battle for the lead. Harvick ends up taking it back. Larson gets up to P3 about halfway into stage two. Larson and Harvick battle for the lead. And another caution-free stage. Jeff, anytime we go through two stages without a natural caution, you start to see the old school fans chime in on social media about wanting a caution-free race. Is that as important today as it was back then, or is this just people complaining and wanting to complain?
Well, here's the thing about cautions. I think, do you have to have a caution to have a good race? No. But if you don't have a natural caution where there's some sort of an incident, I think people go, well, wait a minute. We hear that these cars are so hard to drive and that they're so on the edge and that these guys are racing as hard as they can. But how far are they really pushing it if there's not even a caution? If nobody spins out, if nobody hits the wall, if nobody runs into each other, couldn't they be driving a little bit harder? Because isn't that, that's what when a mistake happens, right?
Yep.
So I think it's sort of it's symbolic of a lack of action. You could have a great race without it, but I think if you don't have that and it's sort of a strung out race, you're like, well, this proves what I think I'm seeing, which is that there's not as much action in this race as a usual race. And that's why people bring up that lack of caution thing.
Gotcha. I'm with you. Stage three, Larson jumps out to the lead. 67 laps to go. Larson had a 4-second lead over Harvick. I thought this one was coming down to Larson and Blaney. Green flag pit stops with 53 to go. Larson comes back out on top. Blaney ends up in second. First caution of the race comes with 31 to go with an on-track incident with the 88 and the 19. We go back to green with 25 to go. Larson and Harvick again battling for the lead. 21 to go. Larson and Blaney battling for third. Talk to me about that incident there, Jeff. Larson, Blaney on the track. Blaney get a little too aggressive there, or was that just racing?
Well, Blaney, I talked to Blaney at the care center, and he said that he felt like if he didn't try to side draft there, he would have gotten sucked around because Harvick blew by him earlier, and he said that it almost spun him around the air. And so he felt like he had to side draft there to try to not only make a pass or prevent Larson from passing him, but to maintain his track position. Now, to me, that move he was trying on Larson looked similar to what Larson did to Harvick in making a pass. And obviously Larson was upset about it. So I brought that up to Larson after the race as well and said, you know, explain this to me like I'm an idiot, which I probably am, but, you know, what's the difference between what you did to Harvick and what Blaney was trying to do to you before he obviously made a mistake? And Larson said, no, there's a big difference. And that was that I had a run. And as I'm had a run on Harvick, yeah, I'm side drafting and trying to make that move, but I was making a pass where he said Blaney was just trying to slow him down. And, you know, he already had the position on him, and Blaney's just trying to take the air away and slow him down and make him catch back up. And then, you know, then he makes a mistake. So Larson felt that it was two different situations. Blaney obviously took blame for it, but, you know, they probably exchanged some text messages afterwards. I don't know, but they probably had to sort that out because Larson, you know, clearly wasn't happy with what happened there.
Well, you know, hey, I mean, how much more real could we get, Lap Traffic Nation? Straight from the care center with Jeff Gluck there. That's awesome. And I can see that because when Larson made that pass, he was on the high line and making the pass where Blaney was on the inside there. So I get maybe where Larson's coming from on that one. As the old cliche goes, cautions breed cautions. After that, we get the big one at Kansas, the 24, the 14, the 1, the 6 of Matt Kenseth. Fortunately, everyone was okay. Some tough hits there. Jeff, talk about Matt Kenseth. Few laps down, but was 14 laps away from bringing the car home in one piece, which, to be honest, that's all he really could have wanted to do. If he'd have finished the race where he was, that probably would have been considered a good day for them. 11 races out from a race at Homestead last year, you really couldn't expect too much. New team, new manufacturer. They didn't have a lot of time to get the car set up or anything like that. That really is a lot removed from a driver's perspective, right?
I don't know. I don't totally buy that. You know, I think that it's easy to hope that that would be the case, especially if you're a Roush fan or, you know, I think you would want to say, well, you know, surely they'll get better. But I essentially, to me, he went out and ran where Bain pretty much runs. But, you know, after he failed to qualify, after his car didn't get out on Friday, I stopped him with Claire B. Lang, and he was saying, well, it only took me 2 laps in the car at practice to feel like I was back up to speed and that I had never even got out of the car. So he felt, you know, driver wise, there's no adjustment period essentially. Wow. And then he was saying in practice that they basically made a bunch of short runs because he knows exactly what he wants in a car. And he was trying to, you know, they'd make a change and he'd either say, okay, right direction or wrong direction. They'd immediately go back to the garage after only 2 or 3 laps. They'd make another change and they'd try to get back out there as fast as possible. So, you know, and it's true. They really didn't have enough practice time for him to get it set up, but I mean, they pretty much had a terrible weekend. To me, I look at it as like that sort of, it's sort of, if you're Trevor Bayne, you're secretly smiling on the inside and saying,
right.
I could have done that. It wasn't all me, was it? Yeah, exactly. You know, cause I think there was a thought out there and probably including for me that, hey, you know, Kenseth's going to be able to jump in that car that Trevor Bayne's been not really performing well in, and he's probably going to raise it 10 positions maybe. You know, maybe if that's like that car's been running, you know, 15th to 18th, maybe Kenseth runs 7th or something like that. Like, I really thought he's going to be able to manage it and just with his talent, his experience. But I think that goes to sort of show you how much in NASCAR comes down to the car.
Sure.
It's just another example of the car matters so much, maybe 90%, 80%, and the driver matters 10 to 20% because Kenseth is a champion.
Yeah.
As he said, he just won, 11 races ago, and then he goes out and, it doesn't look very good. So obviously you would hope for his sake that they're going to pick it up and get better. But we'll see. I mean, it seems like they're pretty far off.
I definitely look forward to seeing how this goes. Can he up the game and get back to some reputable finishes there for Roush? So we head back to green with 10 to go. Harvick restarts 6. 78 jumps out to a second lead with 5 to go. I thought it was over. The 4 runs him down, closes the gap with about 3 laps to go, gets the pass. You kind of mentioned it a little bit earlier when we were kind of just talking about some random stuff. Through 12 races last year, Martin Truex had 2 wins, 5 stage wins, 15 playoff points, and had, by all accounts, a dominating year. The 4 team through 12 races, 5 wins, 24 playoff points, and that's not including the 5 he lost with the one race. You got to go back to 2007, the last time a driver won double-digit wins, and that was with Jimmy Johnson. Obviously, the win percentage is going to drop off here a little bit, but I mean, like you said, it's a special thing that we're witnessing right now, and it's, hard to predict number of wins, and I get all that kind of stuff, but I mean, it's his to lose at this point, right? Or is that too cliche still to say 12 races in?
I think it might be too early just because it's such a long season. You would expect that the other teams are going to rise up and, maybe catch what Harvick is doing a little bit.
Sure.
The garage is too smart to let one team kick butt all year long. But of course you would also think that Rodney Childress is going to continue to make gains as well. They're not just going to sit pat and not do anything while everybody else catches them. So I guess that's what it's going to come down to. Can they sort of stay ahead of the competition as the season goes on? But I do think it's sort of fascinating just the pace he's winning at and just to, like, as you mentioned, we haven't seen double-digit wins in a long time. There's so much parity in the sport. I think it would be really interesting if he could somehow approach Jeff Gordon's 13-win season in 98 or wherever that was. Because I wasn't around then. I wasn't following NASCAR. But to me, that people talk about that still as like, oh, that's sort of like the definite truly dominating season. Yeah. So if Harvick could do that in this era, which I think is even more competitive, I think that would be really something special.
Absolutely. All right. So this weekend we head to the All-Star Race. Big payday on the line. I got to get you just a random take. NASCAR, whether we're talking stick and ball sports, I'm not a big fan of All-Star weekends. It's just not my thing. What's your take on All-Star events in general?
Well, I'm not so anti the All-Star events, but I don't really think it's been working in NASCAR. I actually think there's an opportunity where this race could be really, truly something unique and special. But for whatever reason, NASCAR and Charlotte, whoever's making these decisions, they keep going to, I feel like, what's too much of a safe play.
Sure.
I think this is the All-Star race is a chance to really get outside the box. You have very little downside for failure. Try something completely different, whether it's format or with the cars or running them the other way on the track or something completely different than what everybody sees every week, because this is the place to try. This is where double file restarts came from. This is sort of where stages came from in some ways. So try something that you may want to see in the future, format wise. Now I do recognize this year they're trying to do this rules package where it's basically going to be like a plate, or essentially slow them down. But the drivers are really grumbling about it, and because they don't think this kind of package has any show of talent at all.
It's still going to be mostly car with very small percentage being driver.
Yeah, and probably even more car than in other races. I mean, it's more trends toward like a Daytona or Talladega type thing than a typical race where you have to lift and the best driver wins and you got to manhandle it and stuff like that. And I think that as much as people like side-by-side racing and all that stuff, you want to see, you want to know that the best driver is doing it because he's the best, and it's not because of a car, or not because of fluke circumstances or whatever. I could be wrong, but I mean, there's plenty of people that like plate racing, but
yep.
To me, it's like, why do we watch? We want it. I'm not watching really for the car. See which is in the fastest machine. If that was the case, you could just watch remote control cars. I want to see the best driver make a difference,
yeah,
and do something special and unique. So I'm kind of frustrated with the All-Star race that way. I just feel like, you know, why not do like almost like a Royal Rumble elimination type race, you know, where you're eliminating people every week, or take the All-Star race to, you know, a really cool venue that NASCAR never goes to. And, I don't know, just do something crazy or different with it and see what happens.
I'm with you on the, you know, here's your chance to take a swing and see what happens, you know, and who cares if you fail, cause it's not a points race and it's not going to hurt anybody, you know. Take the gamble there. I'm with you there. That's probably why I'm not a fan of the All-Star sports. You know, the NFL Pro Bowl is a joke. The NHL, you know, I'd rather watch skills competition than watch what the actual product is, you know. So, you know,
I never watched like the NHL All-Star game, but I always, if the skills competition is on, I always watch that. Or same with the NBA. But yeah, like regular All-Star games, I'm with you. I don't really watch, but NASCAR, I feel like it could actually be something cool. They just, for whatever reason, aren't. I think there's a little hesitation to take that leap.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Oh, well, Jeff, I've taken up a lot of your time. I don't want to take up any more. Thank you so much for the insight there. That was a blast. I enjoyed talking with you. I could have done it for another hour there. Why don't you tell everyone where they can find you and all that kind of good stuff on social media?
Well, first of all, I'm sad that this went by so fast.
Thanks.
It just like flew by. So that's kind of a good conversation, I guess. So I hope other people thought it was good, but I enjoyed talking to you, of course. But yeah, I mean, if people want to follow me on Twitter, my Twitter name is Jeff_Gluck, and that's pretty much where I'll post everything or tweet based updates and things like that. But, so thank you to those who said
absolutely.
That. And, yeah, I'd love to come back on sometime.
Absolutely. And tell everyone what tracks you're going to be up at in the near future for tweet ups and all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah. So I'm going to the Indy 500. So I'll probably do a tweet up there. I did one last year. Just if any NASCAR fans are listening or whatever, and they're going to be at Indy 500, you know, let's hang out. Then I'll be at Pocono, first Pocono, and then I'll be at Michigan to see you.
Awesome.
And, then I'm going to Sonoma. I'm skipping Chicago. I'm going to stay home and listen to Dale Jr.'s debut on TV.
Excellent.
See how he does on NBC. And then I'll be at Daytona. So those are my next month or so of races coming up. So obviously, if any of you are listening and you're going to the race, we have a tweet up every race day, whether I'm there or not. And, you know, it's a good time to just hang out and meet people and just meet other fans or whatever and talk racing. And it's pretty low key and casual. Sometimes we have special guests, things like that. So, you know, it's fun.
Excellent.
I usually hang out for at least a half hour or something. So sometimes if there's a lot of time before driver's meeting or something, I'll stay for like an hour or so. So it's fun to just hang out, you know?
Absolutely. I'm with you. All right. Well, again, big thanks, Jeff. Appreciate the time. Enjoy the All-Star race this weekend, and we will definitely talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks again for having me, and thanks again to all listeners for listening to my ramblings.
Absolutely. How awesome was that? That was a real treat there. Big thanks again, Jeff, for coming on the show. That was a lot of fun. Hope you guys enjoyed that. Definitely a couple different perspectives there. Getting to hear some one-on-ones with someone that's actually talked to these guys fresh out of the infield care center, as Jeff had mentioned, and some post-race interviews there and getting Jeff's insight, which is tremendous. I highly encourage you guys to go check out his website, jeffgluck.com, and go support and subscribe as a Patreon member to his stuff. It really is phenomenal. And again, huge thanks, and definitely look forward to having him back on the Lap Traffic Podcast in the near future. All right, Lap Traffic Nation, it is time for some social media. Everyone, make sure you check out the website, thelaptrafficpodcast.com. Keep up to date on who's been on the show, who's coming up on the show. On the website, there's the Amazon link if you want to make your purchases through that portal. It'll help support the show. All that good stuff is on the website. Of course, make sure you're following on Twitter, at LapTrafficPC. Make sure you subscribe and auto-download the show on iTunes, Podbean, Spreaker, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn Radio, Blueberry, Acast. The show is out there. Fear not on that. Don't forget to check out at Sports Radio Detroit on Twitter and their website if you're in the mood for some Detroit sports. Earlier tonight, did a Twitter follower giveaway for a Kevin Harvick t-shirt, and the winner of that was Karen at the 24 Lady. So congratulations, Karen. Cracked the 2,800 follower mark on Twitter, which is awesome. Still a ways away from 5,000 and being able to give away that quarter panel off the Richard Petty Motorsports 43 car from a couple years ago. So we'll keep trucking towards that, and I'll have some other giveaways in the meantime as we get closer to that. How about some new follower shout-outs? E. Glidden in Blue at E. Glidden Blue from Dover, PA. Harley Rider, big NASCAR fan. Welcome to the show. Jason Lyle at Go Harvick Go from Ontario, Canada, and obviously a Kevin Harvick fan. So welcome. Lisa Hall at Lisa H731 loves NASCAR, NHRA, and the Patriots. So we're pretty much best friends there. Bruins girl Chrissy at just underscore Chrissy. Also a Pats fan and Harvick fan. I think we should start a group of Harvick fans, Patriots fans, and wrestling fans. That'd be awesome. Dana Wright at Evil Redhead 4KH from California, Harvick and Cowboys fan. Elena Lagley at NASCAR Langley 88 from Florida, and she is a big Junior fan. On the store, on the website, hoodies, t-shirts, and more. The koozies and stickers are going out each week. I love getting those pictures. They're all up on the website. So if you've tweeted me a picture with your koozie full of your favorite beverage, it's on the website under the fans picture portion of the website. And keep those coming, which is awesome. All right. It is time for a little update on our friends over at Yunker Motorsports. As you guys know, I am a diehard fan of Yunker Motorsports, and they're big supporters of the show as well. A few weeks ago, you guys might remember I did a lap traffic takeover of their Twitter account at Birch Run Speedway. Well, this weekend is the Rusty Wallace Auto Group U.S. Short Track Nationals, May 18th through the 20th at Bristol Motor Speedway. And Yunker Motorsports will be one of the teams representing the iCar Modified All-Star Tour at Bristol. They'll be on the track practicing Friday. They'll be racing Saturday. Get this, the purse for this modified race at Bristol is 20 grand. That's awesome. And the best modified drivers in the country will be there. This is Brad's first time racing at Bristol, actually, but it is very close to his favorite track, which is Winchester Speedway. I know Brad, Chloe, Mike, and the team are super excited about this one. I'm bummed I'm not going to be able to make it there and hang out. And also, the team is bringing some veteran modified racers to help with the setup and get Brad ready to roll at Bristol. I know the team's put in a ton of hours over the last couple weeks. From their last run was actually at that Birch Run Speedway that I was at a couple weeks ago. They're getting ready, and they're also debuting a new body style at Bristol for the rest of the season there. Modified pits will be outside the track. If you guys are out at Bristol for this or near Bristol, go check it out. Racing starts 5 o'clock Saturday, and it's on pay-per-view, really. You can check out and watch the race on speed51.com if you want to check it out. And if you do subscribe to Speed 51 and you're watching Yunker Motorsports Saturday, make sure you take a picture while you're watching it and tweet that to them. I know those guys would love to see that. So best of luck to Brad and Yunker Motorsports this weekend at the Rusty Wallace Auto Group U.S. Short Track Nationals. Good luck, guys, and can't wait to see some updates on that. All right, you guys know what time it is. Back as always, for his weekly weather report. You can follow him on Twitter at RaceWeather. Make sure you check out the website raceweather.net throughout the week for all the up-to-date weather forecasting for this week's and any week's NASCAR event. Mr. Aaron Studwell, welcome back, sir.
Good evening, sir. How are you?
I am excellent. How about yourself?
I'm doing very well. It's actually been a good week.
Excellent. So the weather for Kansas was pretty much as predicted there, and we got some racing in.
We did get some racing in, and we were going about 85% chance of racing. We had thunderstorms in the forecast, and when you have a situation like we had this past weekend, timing can be iffy, and we're looking 4 or 5 days out, and we had a situation where we knew there'd be thunderstorms, and luckily they happened at times when they weren't on track, or they, you know, we had the Friday morning, everything kind of got compressed, and the truck series missed a practice. But I'm happy with the forecast, and even more happy that we actually get some racing in.
Absolutely, no, it was. I don't mind Friday, Saturday night racing. That I like it because then Sunday I can kind of put the show together a little bit, and I like it. Works for me. So this weekend we've got the trucks Friday night and the All-Star race at Charlotte. How's it looking?
Well, there's a tropical low, or there's a low-pressure center over the Eastern Gulf. The National Hurricane Center tried to make it a tropical low and kind of was calling for development early on it, and it never really looked like it was going to come together anyway, and we're sitting here watching it. But that low is going to move on to the Florida Panhandle later tomorrow into Thursday. It is going to slowly move up the eastern third of the U.S., dropping rain. It's already kind of seen some rain across the Charlotte area this evening, and that rain will continue. There'll be a boundary, kind of a dissipating front behind that low as it moves into the northeast. But we do see a chance of showers and thunderstorms on both Friday and Saturday. Friday night, I think, is the showers have a chance of lingering a little bit longer, according to the forecast. And then Saturday night, it looks like it's going to clear out. So we may have some like afternoon showers and thunderstorms on both days. But by the evening hours, especially on Saturday for the All-Star race, it looks like we could have not necessarily clearing skies, but definitely a lower chance of rain. So if you go to the website, or not if, when.
When, that's
or
right, when.
Go to the website. you're going to see thunderstorms in the forecast, but definitely scroll down, and you're going to see that those chances drop off during the evening hour. So we're not trying to scare people away. We're not trying to tell people don't go. But just be realistic that there's going to be chance for delays during the day, especially on Friday. And there's a chance of Friday afternoon or Friday night truck race will maybe interrupted, but I definitely don't see a rain out for either day.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. So two things before I let you go. Number one, on top of your homework assignment for the Coke 600, when we talk next week, make sure you got a little report for Indy as well, because I think people would love to see
I will
as well.
Have a report for Indy. I'm even doing the Patreon report for a Monaco, if you like.
Ooh, all right. There we go. Why not? Let's get them all out there next week.
And I think I did this on Twitter earlier this week. That Memorial Day Sunday is the best day in racing all year.
It's pretty damn cool, that's for sure.
And you only top it by the Ford Championship weekend. There's Ford's little plug that you're paying a lot of money for. Ford Championship weekend down at Homestead, when you've got championship race.
Absolutely.
That whole weekend.
That's awesome.
You go Monaco Grand Prix, you go Indy 500, you go Coke 600. I only have to leave my couch for beverages and snacks.
That's awesome. I love it. Me too. All right. So, and lastly, before I let you go, just to let everyone in on some side humor that you and I have every once in a while. So I was playing some bar trivia Sunday night, and there was a question that came up, and I decided to send you a text message. I screenshotted the screen to you after it was over because our team got it wrong. But Aaron, what is chinophobia as it pertains to precipitation?
And I will be honest, I had to look this up one up myself. It is fear of snow.
I, I, couldn't believe that. I that was not what we came up with. I talked the team into buying this one. I'm like, well, if you break down the word chai is tea, tea's hot, so maybe it's the fear of steam, and not even close.
No. But chai is actually a Greek for snow, and I had to look that one up, and then it dawned on me. It's like, I guess they actually have snow in Greece. It's just funny they have a word for it. I didn't really think about that.
Absolutely. Fun times, sir. Alrighty, man. Well, you have a great week. Everyone, make sure you check out Aaron's Twitter handle at RaceWeather throughout the week for some updates on this All-Star weekend at Charlotte, sir. Fun as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
We'll see it. All right. It is time for some lucky dogs of the weekend. Don't forget, the Wave Around hotline is there. If you want to leave your picks on the Wave Around voicemail, I'll play them back. You can call 248-965-9538 anytime from the drop of the checkered flag through Tuesday, and I will be able to get your picks on the show. Just leave your Twitter name, your name, some comments on the show, and who your lucky dog and lapdown picks are, and I will get those on. And stay tuned to the very near future for some fan-related shows. Shows dedicated just to you guys, calls, talking racing. That's it. We're going to do some extra content shows in the near future here. We'll see if we can't get a time that works for a decent amount of people, and that'll be coming soon for sure. All right, I'm going to get to my picks. My lucky dog of the race weekend is Noah Gregson. Could not have written a better finish to his storybook first win. I think that was awesome. It played out fantastic. Congrats to him and those guys. That was incredible. And Noah Gregson is my lucky dog. My lap down of the weekend has got to be Ryan Blaney. Got a little aggressive there with Larson and took two race contenders out of the race for sure. All right, let's get to some of your tweeted responses. Scott at 1985 Wagner's lucky dog Larson. Back to front. Yes, he did. Lap down, Jimmy Johnson. Don't know what's happened to him or Team Hendrick. Definitely some struggles going on there. Tim at HyperFast13's lucky dog is him. And I know why. Lapdown is me. And I know why. Tim's a buddy of mine and went to the local Royal Oak Music Theater this past weekend for some Ring of Honor wrestling action, to which I said I couldn't go because I had to watch Kansas. And, well, that's why he's putting me a lap down. David at DFlint14's lucky dog, Mr. Kevin Harvick, on track for the best season in this millennium. Lap down, Team Hendrick. They are out to lunch right now, and Seven Time and Chad just seem lost. Linda at RacingGal_FL's lucky dog is Larson for starting 38th. Win stage two, leads a good portion until contact with Blaney. Lap down goes to Blaney for his mistake, taking himself out of contention. Wally T at Wally Tankerton's lucky dog is once again the four, and lap down is once again Hendrick Chevy's. He isn't sure Harv is that lucky or just freaking great, or in parentheses, cheating. Ha ha. Mick at GoDucks42_Mick, who was at Kansas this weekend, bummed his boy, Young Money, didn't get the checkered flag for him, because I know he's a big Larson fan and had a great time out at the track this weekend. His lucky dog is Larson. I don't know how many cars he passed, but that was fun to watch. Lapped down is Chevy. Literally, most of them were a lap down. Out of left field at Out of LF Podcast, their lap down is their schedule in recording consistency. Make sure you go check out of left field. One of the co-hosts on that is Andrew Kansian, who is a diehard supporter of the Lap Traffic Podcast. He's been on the Wave Around Hotline a couple times, and him and a couple of his buddies have a college podcast. So if you want to listen to some college guys just kind of hanging out, that is definitely the show. It's definitely funny to listen to. Jeff at Gray Wolf Pack 5's lucky dog Harvick, not just for an awesome win, but just missing the wreck right behind him with 15 to go. He definitely escaped there. He was paper thin to getting caught up and spun on that one. So yes, I agree with you 100%. Lap down, Elliot and Stenhouse. Come on, boys, play nice. And before we hung up the phone with Mr. Aaron Studwell at Race Weather, he chimed in. His lucky dog is Kevin Harvick, and the lap down team goes to the sixth team as a whole. All right. Thank you, everyone, for your tweeted lucky dog and lap down responses. Make sure you keep those coming. I love it. All right. It is time to talk some fantasy. Everyone, remember to get your picks in 5 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on Friday. The Twitter interaction is strong. Keep that going. I love it. Little side note, did a little DraftKings with the MOATF podcast, more specifically with David, who was actually in Florida this past week on holiday, as they call it. It's vacation, just so you know. And David got to drink my tears, as he called it, last week. But I was able to celebrate the fact that Harvick won. Well, not only did Harvick win this weekend, but I am drinking your tears, sir. And the glass is full. Let me tell you, the glass is full, because not only did I beat you in DraftKings, but you also had to watch Kevin Harvick in Victory Lane. So ha, ha. Is what I have to say to that. All right, so we are almost done with segment one in the Lat Traffic Fantasy League. We have the bonus round this weekend with the All-Star Race. You pick the winner, you get an extra 15 points. Second on back doesn't count for anything. Little bonus thing, most of the league was in favor for that, so we are going to add that in. And don't forget, the trucks, you're going to pick those just like normal. So you got your normal truck pick, and you're picking the All-Star Race winner for an extra bonus 15 points. And then segment one ends at the end of the Coke 600, and we will start segment two. So if you didn't do so well, if you kind of fell off a little bit, get it started back up after the Coke 600, and maybe you can win segment two, and who knows, you might even be able to come up on the cumulative standings as well. Just as an FYI, I'll reach out to everyone to confirm that you are the one of the winners of segment one. All prizes are going to get sent out at the end of the season, just as an FYI. So if you took the 18 of Harvick and the Noah Gregson for the win, you got season high points. Only me, myself, Bruce Dance, and Matt Fossum picked Harvick and Gregson in the league, and we cleaned up with week high 118 points. So congratulations to us, boys. Over to the top 10 in standings. Chloe Yunker still holding on to a first place lead with 1,281 points. Tommy Witt is in second with 1,219. John Etwinsel is in third with 1,207. Chad Robb is in fourth with 1,143. Jeff Hess is in fifth with 1,138. Tasha Snook is in sixth with 1,136. The MOATF podcast is in seventh with 1,115. Paul Hollenbeck is in eighth with 1,114. Tied for ninth is David James and John Elliott with 1,108. And wrapping out the top 10 is our veteran weatherman, Mr. Aaron Studwell, with 1,105. Like I said, I could not brag. This was the best week I've had in fantasy. Picked both race winners, but hey, no big deal. And I am slowly creeping up. I've cracked the 29th spot. Woohoo. All right, that said, it is time for the picks this week. All right, we head to Charlotte for the All-Star Race. Of the 17 current eligible drivers, 10 have an All-Star win. Jamie Mack, Kevin Harvick, Matt Kenseth, Denny Hamlin, Joey Logano, both Busch brothers, Ryan Newman, Jimmy Johnson, and Casey Kane have all cashed in at the All-Star Race. Who does that leave? Keselowski, Dillon, Blaney, Boyer, Stenhouse, Larson, and Truex are all racing for their first All-Star win. Could Blaney or Larson rebound from their hiccup this past weekend in Kansas? What about Austin Dillon, who won the Coke 600 last year? Does he add an All-Star win to his 600 win? And what about Mr. Mile and a Half? Does Martin Truex Jr. get it done in All-Star fashion this weekend? We will find out. It's time for my picks. Since the trucks started racing in Charlotte back in 2003, there's been 15 truck races. Kyle Busch has 7 wins, but he is not eligible for the Lap Traffic Fantasy League. So I am going with the next best pick in the Charlotte, and 21 of Johnny Sauter. No Xfinity this week, so it's over to the Cup. This is for bragging rights only in the Lap Traffic Fantasy League. I'm taking Martin Truex Jr. for my bonus 15 points and to hopefully, maybe, finish segment one in the top 20 in my own fantasy league. Those are the picks. Don't forget to send yours in if you're playing in the league. Segment one is over after the Coke 600 on Memorial Weekend. All right, Lap Traffic Nation, that's going to do it for episode 68 of the Lap Traffic Podcast. This one was a lot of fun. Don't forget to check out the website, thelaptrafficpodcast.com. Like on Facebook, The Lap Traffic Podcast. Follow on Twitter, @LapTrafficC. Subscribe, download, tell your friends. Don't forget to submit your fantasy picks. Huge props to Jeff Clark for taking some time and coming on the show today. That was a blast. Working on next week's guest. I think I got something lined up. This is The Build. We are on our way. We're on the road to Michigan International Speedway. It's going to be a busy and fun month. I am super excited for it. Don't get caught chasing the lucky dog. Make sure you tune in each and every week to the Lap Traffic Podcast. See ya!